Well, what do you know?
Here we are. We made it here live, live.
I'm wondering if this is the first Friday after Thanksgiving that I actually remembered to come in. The whole thing about doing this radio show for Heidi and I is that, you know, we have a routine. We know we have to be here on a work day after we leave our office to get here on time for 5 o'clock to do our show. The thing is, we are always off on the Friday after Thanksgiving. So what has happened, as far back as I can remember, is I look at the clock sometime at around 5:30 and go, oh, no, I forgot to go to the radio station. Thank God there's usually people here to cover for us. But that didn't happen today. It was a little weirder, actually.
I was surprised, too.
Right. Well, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving felt like a Friday. I even said as much when we started our show,
yes,
you know, happy
you
Friday. So it's like getting a second Friday in the same week.
Yay, two Fridays. That's why Friday is always a double happy hour.
There it is. Well, we're going to pick up our series, of course, for the How Music Changed series. We've been covering Eric Clapton. This is part 8 in our series. And we pick up just as he is forming Derek and the Dominoes. Derek and the Dominoes, a band that came about pretty much the remains of what happened after the Delaney and Bonnie Band broke up.
That's right.
There was a little bit of arguing going on between Delaney and Bonnie that drove the rest of the band crazy. They said that Delaney was a bit of a tough taskmaster, a bunch of other issues. So the band the band fell apart, long story short. And Eric Clapton, who was having so much fun playing with them, suddenly found the players coming to him saying, well, why don't we form a band? So next thing you know, he's got Bobby Whitlock, Carl Radle, and Jim Gordon lined up for his own band, which eventually came to be known almost by default as Derek and the Dominoes, just almost on a whim is how the name came about. And we played a couple of tracks with the band forming together last week, so I don't want to have to revisit all of that information, but let's pick it straight up from Eric Clapton's own autobiography about the recording and what it was like in the beginning with the band. On a Sunday night in June, we tried the band out in front of an audience at a charity concert at the Lyceum in the Strand in aid of Dr. Spock's Civil Liberties Legal Defense Fund. In the excitement of just forming the group, one thing had slipped our minds, and that was right up to the last minute before we were to go on stage, we had no name for ourselves.
Oh, no.
Ashton, Gardner, and Dyke were the opening act, and Tony Ashton always used to call me Dell and suggested that we should be Dell and the Dominoes. When he did finally announce us without any mention of our real names, it was as Derek and the Dominoes, and the name just stuck. Our set consisted of songs from our Delaney days, like Blues Power and Bottle of Red Wine, a couple of blues numbers, Crossroads and Spoonful, and because Dave Mason had joined us for this one show, a traffic song, Feeling All Right. The thing I remember best about the whole evening was not the show, but a weird meeting I had afterward with Dr. John, who had been in the audience. I had come across the legendary Night Tripper before in New York City, on the very night that Delaney had told me that my gift would be taken away from me if I didn't sing. On the way home from seeing Sha-na-na, we had dropped by Dr. John's hotel, where he had sung a great song for us called You're Giving Me the Push I Need. It was the first time I had met him, and I was totally mesmerized. Soon after that, we went to see him play live, and I just fell in love with him. He's a wonderful man and an incredible musician. Whether or not he was ever a practicing voodoo doctor, I don't know, but for my own purposes, at that time, I chose to believe he was. When I ran into him at the Lyceum, I told him that I wanted to consult him as a doctor. He asked me what my problem was, and I told him that I needed a remedy. What kind of remedy, he asked, and I told him, a love potion. In a way, I was just calling his bluff, but he then asked me to tell him a little more about the situation. So I told him I was deeply in love with the wife of another man and that she was no longer happy with him, but wouldn't leave him. He gave me a little box made out of woven straw and told me to keep it in my pocket and gave me various long-forgotten instructions as to what to do with it. I do remember that I did exactly as I was told. A few weeks later, purely by chance or so it seemed, I ran into Patty, and we just kind of collided to the point where there was no turning back. A little while later, I saw George at a party at Robert Stigwood's house and blurted the whole thing out to him. I'm in love with your wife. The ensuing conversation bordered on the absurd. Although I think he was deeply hurt, I could see it in his eyes. He preferred to make light of it, almost turning it all into a Monty Python situation. I think he was relieved in some way, though, because I'm sure all the time he knew what had been going on, and now I was finally owning up to it. That was the beginning of a semi-clandestine affair between us and the end of my relationship with Paula, who moved on to Bobby Whitlock. But however much I tried to persuade her, it was quite clear that Patty had no intention of leaving George, even though I was convinced that the writing was on the wall for them. Tormented by my feelings for her, I threw myself into my music, starting with the UK tour of the Dominoes. The idea was that wherever we went, we should play incognito, and in this way get back to our roots. At first, it worked. We toured around the country playing small clubs and halls in towns like Scarborough, Dunstable, Torquay, and Redcar, and no one knew who we were, and I loved it. I loved the fact that we were this little quartet playing in obscure places, sometimes to audiences of no more than 50 or 60 people. This was an incredibly creative time for me. Driven by my obsession with Patty, I was writing a lot, and all of the songs I wrote for the Dominoes' first album are really about her and our relationship. Mm-mm-mm. Layla was the key song, a conscious attempt to speak to Patty about the fact that she was holding off and wouldn't come and move in with me. What'll you do when you get lonely? The Layla album was recorded at Criteria Studios in Miami, where we headed in late August. Its beginnings were inauspicious because we soon found that, apart from Layla, which was still more than a framework, we actually had very little material. Well, here's the song that kicked it all off.
What do you do when you get lonely? Nobody's waiting by.
The late, great Dwayne Allman, of course, providing all that slide guitar all over that track. When it was originally recorded, it was really only about a 3.5-minute song. just the beginning bit, the rocking bit of the song, was the entirety of its recording. But Eric Clapton had said out loud that he didn't think that the ending was good enough, and he wanted to come up with something. And that's when he heard, you know, Jim Gordon, who was the drummer of the band, was working on some solo material, and he was playing the piano. And Clapton had heard him playing that part. And he said, you know, why don't we record that? That could be great. We could use that for the track. So they made a deal where Clapton would let Jim Gordon come in and use the studio time that was for the leftover time that wasn't being used by Derek and the Dominoes, so that Jim Gordon could work on his solo material, provided that Gordon would then give up that piano
that piece
and allow it to be tagged on to the end of Layla.
That seems like a fair trade.
Yeah, and that's what eventually brought Layla up to the 7-minute mark as far as length goes. So that's what caused it to become as long as it is. So it's really it's a Eric Clapton song with a Jim Gordon song tagged onto the end of it, pretty much.
How about that?
That's exactly how that worked.
I did not know that.
Now, another interesting thing about this album in general, the album came out in around in 1970. What was the exact date? November of 1970 is when the album was released. And yet, we'll get into this a little bit more, but the album didn't really sell very well, mostly due to the fact that Clapton didn't want to have his name associated with it, thus Derek and the Dominoes. He wanted to be Derek instead of, or somebody other than Eric, because he was basically writing an entire album about stealing another man's wife.
Yes.
And I think he felt uncomfortable about it.
I wonder why.
Right. So rather than being Eric, he figured by being Derek, it would be a little bit more obscure. And without mentioning Patty Boyd by name, she became Layla. It was Derek and Layla. You know, it was like it was totally in disguise, but it confused the public. And it ended up getting like lackluster reviews and didn't sell an awful lot. And in fact, although we now think of that song as being a big hit, the album was released in 1970, but it wasn't until March of 1972, almost a full 2 years later, that the single was eventually released and it became a top 10 hit in the United States.
That's
and the
nuts.
United Kingdom. But they waited 2 years to release it before it even became out as a single. It's nuts. It is nuts. Well, let's get to the album. Here's the opening track from side one of the album called Layla and Other Assorted Love Songs. The opening track by Derek and the Dominoes.
Bye.
A lot has been made over the years about the fickleness of the of British culture in regard to how it emulates pop stars and then tears them down. But it's really something when you think that just a few years earlier, the graffiti "Clapton is God" was being painted, and it became legendary.
Right.
In terms of like how Eric Clapton was probably the most loaded guitar player of his generation.
Right.
And here, this album comes out when it's released in November of 1970. And check this out. The album didn't even chart in the United Kingdom.
Wow.
Didn't even chart at all.
That's kind of cuckoo.
It's incredible.
A fickle audience, isn't it?
Absolutely. A lot of, people from Great Britain might take offense to that. But I mean, that's a fact. It's just, there it is. Reading again from Clapton's autobiography. So before I left, Patty had asked me to get her some pairs of these jeans we used to wear called landlubbers, which were hipsters with two little slip pockets at the front. She had asked for flared rather than straight bottoms, so I had written bell-bottom blues for her. Then I had another song about her called I Looked Away, which we had just heard, and one or two blues covers I was keen to record. But it was all taking a lot of time, and for the first couple of weeks, we really weren't getting anywhere. Well, here's that song that he had written for Patty when she asked about that pair of flares. Here's Bell Bottom Blues.
like they were having problems in their relationship.
It was, you know, obviously it was a problem before it even became a relationship.
Sounds like
too much intensity and pain taking the place of the love that Clapton was feeling. But of course, it was his muse is what was inspiring him to write. Coming up with song ideas were actually, you know, like you said, he was struggling with writing. But the fact is, the ones that he was coming up with were they were hitting on all, you know, firing on all cylinders, really. Part of the problem also was the amount of junk that was going around at this point in time. Eric Clapton and Bobby Whitlock were both started to use heroin around the time that George Harrison was recording All Things Must Pass. When they were working with Phil Spector, that was apparently when they say was the first time that they had actually used heroin. And when they left Great Britain to go back to Florida to record, obviously they took their heroin addiction with them, and they were in a situation where Florida made it was much easier for them to find what they were looking for than it even was in Great Britain. As Clapton says it, we were staying in this hotel on the beach, and whatever drug you wanted, you could get it at the newsstand.
Oh, my.
The girl would just take your orders. So, rather incredible in terms of in regard to that. Well, Clapton was writing most of the stuff with Bobby Whitlock. They were a bit of an inseparable team here. Six of the tracks on the 14-track album were written by Bobby Whitlock has got writing credit on them. And it was a double album. This is what made it a 14-track album, of course. And besides those six songs, there were obviously a fair number of cover songs as well that would come up from time to time. But this is one of those Clapton-Whitlock compositions from the album, actually from the middle of side two. Here's Any Day.
Love so true. gotta be a fool to understand.
Yes.
To bring your woman back home that she's left you for another. You gotta be a...
You gotta be a man!
You gotta be a man! Man.
If you believe in me.
Gotta believe in you.
Quite the racket being conjured up there by
Southern Fried Opus.
Eric Clapton and Duane Allman, each pushing each other to varying degrees of new heights on this record. I'm going to let Clapton pick up the story here at this point a little bit to talk about the sessions in his writing. I had convinced myself that when Patty would hear the completed Layla album, with all of its references to our situation, she would be so overcome by my cry of love that she would finally leave George and come away with me for good. So I called her up one afternoon and asked her if she'd like to come over for tea to listen to the new record. Of course, it was blatant emotional blackmail and doomed to failure. By this time, I'd already applied quite a lot of pressure, and this was just more of the same. Having said that, the quality of the music was pure, and I really did need to share that with someone, and who better than her? Anyhow, she came over and listened, and I think she was deeply touched by the fact that I had written all these songs about her. But at the same time, the intensity of it all probably scared the living daylights out of her. Needless to say, it didn't work, and I was back at square one. Over the next few months, I blindly kept on trying to persuade Patty to leave George and come and live with me, but I was getting nowhere. Until one day, after another session of fruitless pleading, I told her that if she didn't leave him, I would start taking heroin full time. In truth, of course, I had been taking it almost full time for quite a while. She smiled sadly at me, and I knew the game was over. Apart from one brief meeting at the London airport, that was the last time I saw her for several years. Yet another track here, obviously dedicated to Patty, from the album called Layla and Other Assorted Love Songs, is a cover of a Billy Miles song called Have You Ever Loved a Woman?
Have you ever loved a woman?
trembling pain. Have you ever loved a woman with so much your trembling pain? All the time you know, yeah, she bears another man's name. You just love that woman so much, it's a shame and a sin. You just love that woman, yes, so much, it's a shame and a sin. Can't leave her.
never love a woman. Yes, and you know you can't leave her alone. Something deep inside of you, I won't let you rain. Your best friend. Oh, 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 oh.
Some more remarkable guitar playing there on that track, and some obviously very heartfelt singing.
Some heartfelt lyrics, yeah.
Coming from Eric Clapton. Though he didn't write the song, you might as well have.
He found the appropriate one.
Now, the whole situation with Duane Allman playing with Derek and the Dominoes was really just total coincidence more than anything else. It only happened because Tom Dowd had mentioned to Eric Clapton that the Allman Brothers were recording right in the same town at the same time, and that maybe they could get together to go out to see some shows or meet up. So when they did meet up, Clapton and Duane immediately fell into step with one another. And it was Clapton who basically totally fell head over heels in love with what Duane Allman was doing. And he asked Allman to join the band, become the fifth member, become the second, the other guitar player, even the guitar player. But Clapton demurred. I mean, he had just formed, really. The Allman Brothers Band only had one album out at this point in time, their debut. His brother Greg was in the band. They were the Allman Brothers Band. I mean, for him to leave it would have been awful. And the album they were working on at that exact same time was Idlewild South, which eventually the first album and Idlewild South would be combined and they'd be released as the album Beginnings, which, if there's anybody who's ever been a remote fan of Southern rock, I mean, that's where it is. That is the beginning. That is it. I mean, I don't know really what else matters more than what's on that record by the Allman Brothers Band. Their first two studio albums are stunning pieces of work. But, Duane was still happy to play with Eric, so he would come down and they'd basically, over 10 recording dates, Allman contributed to pretty much the entire album. There's only three songs that were recorded without him. Bell Bottom Blues, I Looked Away, and Keep On Growing. But in the rest of it, Duane was pretty much just like a full-blown member. One track that they wanted to work on, that Eric wanted to have done as a tribute to their friend Jimi Hendrix, was to do an extended version of one of his songs. So they made up an arrangement for it, which was pretty remarkable. Here is their version from the album Layla and Other Assorted Love Songs, Derek and the Dominoes performing Little Wing. Thank you. virtual wall of sound on that recording as Derek and the Dominoes perform Jimi Hendrix's tune, Little Wing. Eric Clapton was really looking forward to playing that track for Jimi Hendrix. They recorded it, and you know, basically he was a professional rival, but also a good close friend, and he loved the song. 8 days after they cut the song, Jimi Hendrix was found dead. Tragedy there. The tragedy that surrounds this band is just crazy. I mean, just there's so much to be said about if you want, you know, any band that's going to basically stand as a testament to why drugs are nasty thing, you know, they will kill you. I mean, there's so much tragedy around this band, Eric and the Dominoes. So there's Eric. There's Jimi Hendrix dead. Doesn't even get a chance to really even hear the track. A year after Duane is done recording. With, you know, after this, Duane Allman, you know, continued his time with the Allman Brothers, only lasted about a year longer until he was killed in a motorcycle accident. So that was devastating. Although he was, like I said, not actually a band member per se. He, you know, Eric Clapton felt incredibly close to him. And of course, his presence was felt because he was all over this album.
Right.
And finally, the maybe the most incredible tragedy of all was what befell drummer Jim Gordon. He was a turns out that he was a schizophrenic, undiagnosed, and people didn't know it. And a few years later, he attacked his own mother with a hammer and killed her. And just beat her to death with a hammer. He was confined to a mental institution, and that's where he is at this very moment as we speak. So much sadness. Such a drag. Meanwhile, the band did go out on tour without Duane Allman. Played a lot. It's interesting to note that we have a recording here. Probably the most famous Allman Brothers recording, album, I should say, is called Live at the Fillmore East, when the band recorded there in early 1971, I believe. Huh. This recording is also live from the Fillmore East. It's Derek and the Dominoes without Duane Allman performing a song that Eric was incredibly famous for back from his time with Cream, which everybody still wanted to hear. So he was able to bring this back as Derek and the Dominoes. We'll leave you with this recording then. Derek and the Dominoes performing their version of Crossroads. Take care, everybody. See you next week.
Nice.
and squeeze my lemon till the juice runs down my leg. Well, I'm going back to you, Hurst. You can run, you can run. Tell my friend Paul Willie Brown. And I'm standing at the crossroads. Ooh, I believe I'm sinking down. We'll be right back.